Welcome to Cold Steel, the Canadian Journal of Surgery podcast, with your hosts Amir Farouk and Chad Ball. The goal of the CJS podcast is threefold. The first is to highlight the best research currently being completed by Canadian surgeons. The second is to offer educational topics for both surgeons and trainees alike. And most importantly, the third goal is to inspire discussion, thoughts, creativity, and career development in all Canadian surgeons. We hope you enjoy it.
Dr. Karina Spoyala, thank you so much for joining us today on the Cold Steel Podcast, CSF 2023 edition. As I think many of our listeners will now know, we're trying to highlight some of the best research and presentations and content from the recent Canadian Surgical Forum in Vancouver this year in September of 2023. And Dr. Spoyala is a resident at the University of British Columbia in general surgery and was one of the papers that was selected for the top paper session at CSF. So thank you again, Dr. Spoyala, for joining us. And really excited to hear about your work about perioperative warming strategies.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here.
So Dr. Spoyala, can you tell us a little bit about what the impetus was for doing this research and walk us through what you did?
Absolutely. So this patient warming project is at the interface of planetary healthcare research, quality and quality improvement research, which is something that we're realizing aligns very well together. And so this kind of presented as a perfect opportunity to study how we can both improve the quality of patient care that we provide and do so in a very sustainable way that reduces the impact of the healthcare system on the environment. So I'll walk you through this, and this project has many collaborators from anesthesia, from environmental engineering, a lot of nursing involvement on this. So it's definitely a team effort. And there's no conflicts of interest. So this all stems from trying to prevent perioperative hypothermia, which is what warming patients is meant to do. And the reason why we want to prevent it is because it can cause coagulopathy and surgical site infection, as well as other complications. And these come at a very high cost to the hospital, so up to around $7,000 per patient. So it's important to try to prevent these. And currently how we're doing this in the hospital is through a combination of active warming and passive warming. So that's in the form of the bear hugger, which is a forced air warming system, and the passive warmer, which is the warmed flannel blanket. And currently the way that we're warming patients is quite variable because it's up to the individual provider. And so not only is it variable and non-evidence-based at times, it's also fairly wasteful. There's additional warming devices that have been shown to be clinically equivalent to the forced air warmer, which is the resistive blanket and the circulating water garment. The resistive blanket is a reusable blanket that goes underneath the patient and is warmed that way, whereas the circulating water garment is disposable, similar to the forced air warmer flex gown, and it's meant to accompany the patient throughout the entire journey, just using water rather than air to warm them. So the project objectives were first to audit the current patient warming practices to really quantify what we were doing and how we were doing it. Then we were comparing those three different active warming devices that I showed in addition to warm flannel blankets using processes called life cycle assessment and life cycle costing. And these are strategies used to quantify the environmental and financial impacts of a process or a consumable throughout its entire life cycle. So from when they meet consumables are first extracted from the ground all the way until their disposal. And this is done with an environmental engineering lab out in UBC Okanagan. And then using that information, we then set out to inform the quality improvement piece, which is to design and optimize patient warming strategy to try and improve how we're using those resources and maintain normothermia and reduce waste. So first, we did the audit and we looked at 51 surgical patients at VGH, and we looked at the number of flannels that they were using, the adherence to the NICE perioperative guidelines, the incidence of hypothermia, and patient-reported outcomes. We found that on average, patients were using approximately 6 blankets, but up to maximum 11 throughout the entire perioperative journey. And in recovery, they were being warmed only with flannels, even if they were hypothermic. A quarter of the time, we were using flannels for things like positioning or for periphery warming and not actually for core warming.
I just love this number. 11 blankets for patients.
Yeah,
and the funny thing is that you can just visualize like
up to here.
A blanket under each arm, yeah. Under their head, like 55, about five on the patient. But like you just, it kind of boggles the mind that there's 11 blankets on a patient.
Yeah, it's a lot. And it's clear that it's really not providing effective warming if we need so many. So yeah, it's a great number. When we compared to the guidelines as to what we were doing, we found that about half of our patients were warmed with forced air preoperatively, but about a quarter of them actually did meet criteria for pre-warming based on the risk factors, but didn't receive it intraoperatively. So we had some improvement to do in this regard. Our incidence of hypothermia was fairly good. It was 8%, which is in keeping with literature and with our previous QI study in 2011. And then we also did patient-reported outcomes just to show that patients were quite satisfied at baseline with their thermal comfort so that in the future when we do implement any interventions, we have something to work off of. For our results, so we quantified the environmental and financial impact of the flannels and 0.36 kilograms of carbon dioxide equivalents per blanket and about $1.50 to $2.50. We then extrapolated that to the amount of blankets that were used in the past year just in the perioperative area alone, and that would total about 48,000 kilograms of CO2 or about $400,000. Now, in layperson's terms, because I'm not quite comfortable with converting kilograms of CO2 either, but it's about owning 10 vehicles or burning about 54,000 pounds of coal. So it's a fairly substantial environmental impact just from those flannels that aren't really providing good warming. We then did a comparative life cycle analysis of the three warming devices, and this is over 1 hour operating time, and it shows that the resistive blanket really is the most preferable device from an environmental standpoint. And these results are normalized against the worst performing devices. So it's pretty much a tie between the forced air warmer and the circulating water garment here. And this is an average across 18 different impact categories. The life cycle costing, which is the financial bit, essentially shows a similar picture. The resistive blanket really is the best performer and the circulating water garment does the worst. And it costs around $150 a piece. Because a resistive blanket did so well, but is typically only used intraoperatively in our hospital, we then mapped out these clinical scenarios, incorporating the flannels and the resistive blanket and the forced air warmer into different settings. And it was meant to really mimic how a patient were to be warmed throughout the entire perioperative journey. So the first two scenarios is how we currently warm patients using a combination of forced air and flannels. And then the last scenarios are hypothetical, using the resistive blanket and circulating water garment and inputting those at different settings throughout. We found that what we're currently doing is the worst, both from an environmental and cost standpoint. So, you know, the positive spin is the only way to go is up from here. So that's great. And then the most sustainable pathway was intraoperative warming with the resistive blanket and pre and post-operative warming with the forced air warmer flex gown. We then set out to take these results and put them into an optimized warming pathway with two goals. The first one is to reduce the flannel use because, as mentioned, it's not evidence-based. There's a high volume of them being used and they have high financial and environmental costs. And then the second goal was to improve the sustainability of our active warming. And our optimized patient warming pathway essentially is summarized here. And it says that when patients come in to the preoperative area, they're screened based off of the criteria from the NICE guidelines. And if they meet risk factors, then they're pre-warmed for 30 minutes using a flex gown. We want to remind healthcare providers to use the pockets in the flex gown for periphery warming rather than flannels, so we can save reduce flannel blankets there. For the intraoperative piece, we recommend removing and saving that flex gown, warming with a resistive blanket intraoperatively, and then reapplying the flex gown after their surgery. And if the patients are hypothermic in the postoperative setting, to warm with the flex gown. Although we have changed this slightly and are in discussions about whether we should just warm with the flex gown regardless and not remove it, even if patients aren't hypothermic, just for comfort. So that's kind of a work in progress piece. So in conclusion, the most sustainable active warming device is by far the resistive blanket, and the most sustainable pathway is intraoperative warming with that blanket and pre and post warming with the forced air warmer flex gown. And really the most exciting part of this is that it shows how you can incorporate life cycle analysis and life cycle costing into quality improvement research and really bring that sustainability lens forward. And next steps is that we're planning on implementing this patient pathway in 2 weeks' time at our hospital. So that's currently what we're working on.
Congratulations again, Karina, on such awesome work. And for any of our listeners who haven't listened to our previous interview with Dr. McNeil, you need to go back and listen to that because, you know, once again, Dr. McNeil is the, you know, principal investigator on this project. And it just shows you that the work that she's doing with, you know, sustainability and planetary health is not just an abstract, you know, tree hugging exercise, but it's really contributing to better patient care and better overall cost saving for the hospital. So congratulations again for some really neat work. Can you just go back to your first slide talking? Can you just talk about what this resistant blanket thing is? Because I've never actually, I don't think I've ever seen that in the hospital myself.
Absolutely. So it is this bright orange blanket, so to speak, and it uses electricity to conduct heat and to warm the patient. It goes underneath the patient and it's kind of made of this almost plasticky material, but it is reusable. So you would wipe it down with a sanitary wipe after after each patient. So we have been using it and trialing it at our hospital over the past year with some patients, but we really haven't done any sort of analysis with comparing it with the other devices. So that's what this is meant to do.
And does it interfere at all with like if you need to put other like pads and stuff? Like I'm thinking about you have to put patients in really steep Trendelenburg break. Does that at all affect patients sliding on the table or anything like that?
It's a good question. I think the patients that we're currently using it with are burns patients and cardiac patients. So I'm actually not sure if they do a lot of steep Trendelenburg in those cases. So I'm not sure if that would be an issue currently, but I feel like it. I haven't heard of anything kind of negative from that standpoint. I know it doesn't interfere with things like, you know, cautery or your typical uses in the operating room. But I feel like the material of it is actually fairly, like it's good for friction. So I feel like it would actually be fairly good for that.
And Kamina, you said that you're not actually going about implementing your sort of most optimal strategy. And remind us, so that was basically forced air warning pre and post-op with use of resistant blankets intra-op. Is that correct?
It is. So that's the optimized warming strategy kind of in full. We're doing it as a step approach first. So because it's obviously quite challenging to implement a brand new device and roll it across all the operating rooms, we're first starting to preserve that flex gown and use it in the recovery area for warming because it is meant to accompany the patient throughout the whole journey. So that's the first step of it is we're bringing in the 3M team and we're training the nurses and we're training the anesthesia and the surgery teams to be able to preserve that gown and drape in a way that it's not damaged. And then to warm the patient in recovery using it. And then when the resistive blanket is able to be brought in, then we can very easily just take that flex gown, save it, and then everybody's already trained in the recovery room for how to use it. We're also expanding that pre-warming criteria at the same time and encouraging the use of the pockets in the flex gown. So those are the three interventions that we're doing currently.
What sort of challenges have you come across in trying to both do this research as well as, you know, obviously actually implement these changes in the hospital? Because, you know, clearly we use flannels for everything. I mean, I think I always say to patients, like, the only good thing about being in the hospital is that you get these like warm gowns, and sometimes you wish you had like this nice warmer at home. They could heat all your blankets in at home. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of status quo and inertia in trying to change something like this. What challenges have you had in doing this research and in implementing these changes?
For doing the research, I think it's both a challenge and a strength of the study with incorporating the sustainability aspect, but it certainly does make it challenging. It's very resource intensive to do a life cycle analysis, and doing so with an environmental engineering team makes it simpler from a kind of practitioner standpoint. But you do have to consider all the different change ideas and how they affect sustainability. So for example, if you're looking at flannels as being used for positioning or for pillows, a very easy QI solution for that would be to have order more pillows or order, you know, different positioning devices to replace those flannels. But realistically, without any sort of sustainability assessment, you don't actually know if you're replacing it with something that's worse than a flannel or potentially better for the environment. So really, you have to change ideas that are going to be reusable products or things that you know will actually improve the both the sustainability and the care that you're providing. So that has been a challenge to essentially make sure that we're sticking with our guns with that. And then one of the challenges with implementing this, as you said, flannels are obviously a really big piece of comfort that we provide to patients. And it's a very kind of human touch that nurses like to give. And we're certainly not eliminating them from the pathway and saying that we can't use them altogether. We really just want to reduce those 11 blanket offenders that are using them and obviously could be using a much more clinically effective form of warming, and one that is typically thrown in the garbage after the operation is done, which is that forced air warmer flex gown. So really, we're preserving a piece of equipment that's already being used and reducing the use of additional flannels in the recovery room. Certainly, if patients still want a warm flannel blanket, I think that that's very reasonable. But it's all about kind of reducing our resources altogether with the use of more effective ones.
Bruna, thanks again so much for spending the time with us to talk about your work, and congratulations again. And we look forward to seeing more work like this in the future from you and from Dr. McNeil.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Cold Steel, the official podcast of the Canadian Journal of Surgery. This episode was produced and edited by Kirsten Allen, one of our new team members on the Cold Steel team and a medical student at Queen's University. If you have comments or questions, please email us at podcast.cjs@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.